If you're searching for a polyamorous relationship because you want more sex,
yeah,
that's not the reason to get into polyamory. Polyamory is for people who love love.
Okay, right. Wow.
Who love love, because that's what it is. It's multiple relationships. You want more sex, just go be a swinger. Mm. You'll be fine. But adventure, I think at its true form, is about stepping into the unknown.
Agreed.
Having the courage and the resilience and the purpose and the peace and the fortitude to find the answer you're looking for, whatever that answer may be.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Can I add to that? I think there also needs to be an element of joy. Joy plus pressing into the unknown. Now you've got your adventure.
Yeah. What action do you want them to take? Today would be good.
Don't
give the man some space.
I've got a rule. You don't speak without thinking. Don't wait.
Yeah.
Don't wait. Like, what have you got to lose?
Yeah.
Except for time.
Yeah.
That's why you adventure.
Yeah.
Because you're going to wake up one day and you're going to find yourself just regretting the things that you didn't do. They did a study where it says that you are more likely at the end of your life, and I'll summarize it, to regret the things you didn't do rather than the things you did do.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever that adventure is, stop fucking thinking about it.
Yeah.
And go do it. That's the action.
That came from left field, Chip, didn't it? But I think you got your point across.
Yeah. How many has you got left?
You got three left, mate.
You can't define love. You can't sit there and say love is this one thing. This is how I feel love. This is how you feel love. Love is so wild. It is so free. It is so infinite in itself that there is no definition. And so many different relationships, even happy ones, work in so many different ways on so many different levels.
Chipster.
Mm.
I think you've met your match.
I'll take that. Consider that praise.
We've just spent an hour with him, Andrew Komnenos. How intelligent is the guy?
Yeah, I know. I think you can feel the energy too. I think you can feel the simpaticoness. he's given us the cut it out motion.
Mate, I'm frightened for our listeners today.
Yeah.
Because guess what? He may be more intelligent than you.
Settle down, pal. That's enough of that.
Hey, Andrew Komnenos, welcome to A Journey with Bernie and Chip.
Thanks, guys.
I'm so grateful
to be here.
Yeah,
hey, mate, tell the listeners where we met.
We met at a networking event in the middle of the city.
Yes.
Technically, that's actually where we met, but we didn't actually talk. I just gave you a slip to say, you need to contact me. And then you pursued me.
We got into romantic territory really quickly.
Pursued me very deeply into and then we had a coffee at just down the road from our houses, and we realised we live 50 metres from each other.
Well, exactly. That's part of the reason why you're here, mate. But the reason why I pursued you is because I could actually hear your bloody confidence and the way that you presented yourself. And I go, here's a young man with a difference.
I believe you said best podcast prospect we may have ever had. Not to pump it up too much. I'm in the vapors.
I mean, not to be overly confident, but you're right.
This is what I'm looking for. This is what we need here.
Did I really say that?
Yeah. You were in a fugue state. You were just so enthralled. I know how you feel. I can barely remember that morning too.
I know. But I can remember all of it.
Yeah, of course you can.
Now, one of the reasons why I said one of the best prospects in a long, long time. I feel like one of those sports. I'm selecting the draft players for the AFL team, you know. One of the best prospects in a long, long time coming out of the Geelong area.
Well, I'm not from Geelong, firstly.
But you've had such an incredible life. Andrew, you're mid-30s?
35,
Dean. And you've already had a life that's full of riches, full of Everest, full of valleys, ups and downs, and you've arrived at a good place.
Oh, my friend, you're speaking my language.
Mate, two or three highlights of life so far. Go.
So I started a business called The Results Guys.
Yes.
The Results Guys.
Good.
And then I was called The Results Guy because I was the original guy.
That sounds like The Good Guys.
Yeah, it was a sales coaching firm. I did that for a few years. I think the meat recently is I was in a really long-term, probably toxic relationship that I sort of came out of and then healed myself, and now I'm on this amazing journey of Project Remarkable. And my purpose is two things, right? To live an adventurous life of fulfillment filled with adventurous pursuits like hiking and climbing and adventure, and to empower people to succeed through, you know, through adventure and the adventurous spirit.
Yeah.
And so I mixed those two together and brought my sales coaching and my coaching experience and thousands of hours of personal development and my own personal journey and built Project Remarkable, which became how do I find people their map to success, which is mind, body, profit.
Okay. Cut to the chase. How do you know it's your purpose? Well, what is it that you experience and you go, I know this is my purpose?
Because adventure lights me on fire.
Yeah.
And seeing, have you ever been in a room where you've shifted someone's belief and they've just become, or they've changed and they've gotten it and they've gone, oh my gosh, what have I been living? How have I been living?
Yeah.
And you see this change in them. There is nothing quite like that moment of helping someone become the best version of themselves.
Is that what you experienced?
Yes, in multiple different ways at multiple different times throughout my life. Yeah.
Now, so far, you've given us a definition of adventure through the metaphors of the mountains, the remarkables. I've got you climbing up different routes. Mm. What is the definition of adventure? Is it broader than that? Or is it all about trekking and hiking and mountains?
But adventure, I think at its true form, is about stepping into the unknown.
Agreed.
Having the courage and the resilience and the purpose and the peace and the fortitude to find the answer you're looking for, whatever that answer may be.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Can I add to that? I think there also needs to be an element of joy. Joy plus pressing into the unknown. Now you've got your adventure.
Yeah.
The other thing through adventure is it connects us to our inner child in such a way that nothing else does.
Yeah.
It's playful.
Yes.
Adventure is playful. Adventure is a game. Like it's like, ooh, what's next?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Where it's not just a slog. It's it's a playful, joyous, meaningful struggle.
That's why you have to find the adventure that you want, that you love, your adventure. For some people, that's business. Some people, that's hiking. Some people, that's climbing. Some people, that's, you know, multiple relationships. I don't know, right? Some people, that's like lots of different things.
Hey, right? Hey. Foregrounding.
So, what's your message to our listeners here? I want you to summarize it. And there's a lot of listeners here hearing what you've got to say. What are you saying to them now? What action do you want them to take? Today would be good.
Don't
give the man some space.
I always, I've got a rule. You don't speak without thinking. Don't wait.
Yeah.
Don't wait. Like what have you got to lose?
Yeah.
Except for time.
Yeah.
That's why you adventure.
Yeah.
Because you're going to wake up one day and you're going to find yourself just regretting the things that you didn't do. Yeah. They did a study where it says that you are more likely at the end of your life, and I'll summarize it, to regret the things you didn't do rather than the things you did do.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever that adventure is, stop fucking thinking about it.
Yeah.
And go do it. That's the action.
That came from left field, Chip, didn't it? But I think you got your point across.
Yeah. How many has he got left?
You got three left, mate.
I've got more than three in me. Don't worry about that.
Overflowing.
Yeah. Let's see if they can beat Dane Beecher, mate.
Yeah. He was pretty restrained.
He was, actually. I thought he held back pretty well. Yeah. Hey, so if a client was to ring you this afternoon, what are you offering that client? I want to get a better picture of what your business is. What are you actually offering that client? They're paying you some money for a service. What service are you offering them, and what outcome are they looking to achieve?
So I work with multi six-figure and seven-figure business owners that are looking to either maintain their performance, perform better, or have woken up in the mirror one day, looked down and gone, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Right. I don't know who this is anymore. I've lost myself. I'm stressed. I'm overwhelmed. I'm stuck. And they come to me not looking for a safe space, because I'm not the safe space guy. I'm not the guy you come to for a cuddle. Yeah. I'm the guy you come to when you want to push yourself, when you want to grow, when you want to perform. Because the reality is that your business is not you. It is a reflection of who you are. And if you want your business to perform, you have to perform first. So they come to me to be trained in their mind, trained in their body, and trained, and then use those things to train the profit out of their business.
Yeah.
Which is, so I call it, your mind is the catalyst, your body is the vitality and the energy, and your profit systems, so your sales strategy, sales processes, sales systems, is a thing that drives your business success.
Yeah.
But you have to be performing as a human for your business to perform effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what they get from me is being able to build a life that is not stuck in being busy. Because you can make all the money in the world and be the least successful person that's ever lived.
If it's not stuck was that so good?
Mm.
Say it again.
You can make all the money in the world and be the least successful person that's ever lived.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, saddest moment, we all know it, one of the saddest moments in history is when Robin Williams took his own life.
Yeah.
He was very wealthy, very successful by the standards of society.
Yeah.
Mm.
But his internal success was extremely low.
Yeah.
Yeah. And had always been. It was always a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were advocating then something that opposes the busyness of life.
Mm.
So if it's not busyness of life, what are you advocating?
I'm advocating for people say to me, what's like you say, you hear people say all the time, not to me specifically, but what's the purpose of life?
Yeah.
And there are two sayings one saying is mine, one is Jimmy Carr. Right? He said, to enjoy the passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I say is to live a life of fulfillment.
Yeah.
That's the purpose, right? So, but if you spend your life being busy and spend your life go, 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 and building all this success and wealth, and don't get to use that success and wealth to live your life and go on adventures and have a great time and be with your family and love.
Yeah.
What's the point of it?
Yeah.
So my thing is like allowing business owners to perform at their best in every facet of life.
Yeah.
Not just in this one thing, which will eventually turn into burnout and overwhelm and stress.
So my understanding is this is why the metaphor before of the remarkables, which really is a picture of spending time with nature, adventure, being bold, being courageous, and you want to offer that to the individual who is also managing and leading their business. So what an unusual business, because you're saying, not only am I going to sales coach, not only am I going to facilitate and help you with your strategy to get your business on board and going forward, I'm also going to give you something on a personal basis through nature.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the majority of the coaching happens in a normal setting, right? On Zoom, in person, at a coffee shop, whatever. But then you grab them by the ear and you take them out and facilitate calm, facilitate peace, facilitate pushing themselves to a new level that they didn't think they were capable of getting to.
Okay, yeah.
Right? And so I always say, like, I've got some adventures which are like overnight adventures, and I say, you know, this isn't a bloody retreat.
Yeah.
You're not going to come back and go, wow, I'm so fucking relaxed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You're going to come back and be like, oh, damn, I'm a different person.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest things that I've noticed, like with many of my clients that I do, is I spend so much, like I always say to them, what have you done today to bring your nervous system back into a state of relaxation? Mm. Because we function best when we are relaxed, not when we are stressed.
Yeah.
You need an element of stress. You need a little bit of stress is good.
Yeah.
But most of us are functioning from this state of just high intensity stress.
Yeah.
And so you're not as creative and you're not as capable of running your business at like a level that is as effective. And people go, oh, but I've made all this money. Well, that's great. But, you know, people hate you.
Hmm.
Or, you know, you've got all these other problems in your life, even within the business. So, if you want to run a business that's really capable and really effective in every facet of the business, you need to be performing at your best.
Yeah.
And for you to perform at your best, one of the fastest ways to bring back performance for someone who's already a high performer is to facilitate calm and peace in their life.
Let's linger on that, though. So, you talk about getting people back to calm. Bernie's mentioned nature. What are the other things that you do to pull these people back into calm? And what are the most effective that you've found?
I think the single most effective, it's universal. Mm. I've done this on hundreds of people and never once has it failed. Not a single time. I'm hopefully it never fails, right? But it's never failed yet.
It's on the table now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You guys are going to go try this. Yeah. That sucked, right? Literally, one of my favorite things to do to people is go, stop, walk outside, sit down on the grass for 5 minutes and be totally present and focused in the moment that you're in.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to do it on the grass. Like I say, go sit on the grass because it's nice to connect with nature, right? Yeah. Do it on a chair. Do it in your office. Sit in front of the TV with the TV off and like in your in your house. It doesn't matter where you are.
Yeah.
But just sit there for 5 minutes and be totally present. Now, I don't say close your eyes and meditate.
Yeah.
Mm.
What I said is exist. Just be.
Yeah.
So, just sit there. And all I say to people, because some people find that really hard, right? So, I just say, all I want you to do is over and over again in your mind, say, I am totally present in this moment.
Yeah.
I am totally present in this moment.
Yeah.
I am totally present in this moment. And what that does is it stops you from thinking because you're saying this one thing repetitively.
Yeah.
You could say
a mantra.
You could also just say be totally present. It doesn't have to be I am, but I am totally present in this moment. And you're constantly just thinking. And then what you do is I don't want people to close their eyes. What I want them to do, because that's what we do. We're either here, busy, 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 or we're away and meditating and sleeping with my eyes closed and I'm not anywhere. And so I'm like, how many times have you just opened your eyes and said, I'm totally present in this moment and just sat there and watched a little ant crawl across the floor or a blade of grass or a tree sway whatever happens, and do that for 5 minutes and the level of peace that it'll bring you in comparison to where you are. I'm not saying it'll get you straight right back to, oh my gosh, I'm the Dalai Lama, right? But what it will do is it will give you, it'll bring you back into a state of calm, stop the go, 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 slow you down and allow you to think more clearly for the rest of your day.
I know it sounds a bit of a crazy question in the how often should you take that 5 minutes? Now, one could say it depends upon the nature of the day. But every 2 or 3 hours in a busy lifestyle, should you be taking that 5 minutes, in your opinion?
Well, Bernie, I know what you're thinking behind that.
They call that a leading question.
Right. See, the thing is, he knows what the listener's thinking, right? They're thinking, oh, of course you can't do that. But Bernie's like, yeah, you damn well better be taking that. Yeah.
Mm.
Right. It's obviously as much as you need to take it, sure.
Yeah.
But it's funny because this is synchronicity. Remember, we were talking out there and I was like, oh my gosh, there's synchronicity, right? You mentioned consistency or intentionality before. I've been talking a lot lately about intentional consistency, like being able to be consistent every day without fail, intentionally, not just randomly consistent. Oh, look, I'm running outside to practice my basketball shots, but I'm just throwing the ball around. I'm specifically practicing with intention, right? Yeah. You need both, intentional consistency. So you would take it as much as you need it.
Mm.
But I said, everyone, I want at least once a day.
Yeah.
Once a day. But if you can't, if you're living in this life and you can't take 5 minutes to just be in the world and find peace, why are we here?
Yeah, yeah.
G'day, listeners. You gad about beavers thwacking your paddle-shaped tails on the dam of self-interrogation. It's Chip here, coming at you from our hotel room in smashing Kathmandu, Nepal. So if you hear a little bit of a change in the audio quality, that's why. And please forgive us if it's a bit of a shock. But hey, we're in Nepal. So let's get on with today's loaded question, because what Andrew just said there interrupted me. If we're constantly lost in the hustle of busyness every day, rushing from this thing to that thing, eyes always turn to the future and that next task, how much of our lives are we actually living? Because when you're lost in flight, you're not experiencing the world, you're just charging through it. So here's the question. How much of the past week you've just lived do you really remember? And not just concepts like, I went to work, I did the shopping. What about the smells, the sights, the tastes, the sounds, the way your body felt moment to moment? How much of that do you remember? And how much would you like to?
Hey, Chip, don't beat your mate. I'm hearing it again.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the whole concept of routine and the activity of routine is that activity. You choose that activity because it reflects your own values. You know, well, it's
the most disciplined person is the most loving person.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's like if you can't keep your word to yourself, that just shows how much you don't love yourself. It doesn't show how much you don't love others.
Yeah.
Will Smith said it the best. I've ever heard it. He goes, there's no problem with eating a pizza. The question is, why are you eating the pizza? Are you eating it because you're feeding your soul? Or you're eating it because you hate yourself?
Yeah.
Domino's, did you hear that?
But right,
not loving it.
Hey, but buddy, terrific stuff. Really, really good understanding of where you're currently at and some of the values and some of the advices and guidances that you've got for not only Chip and I, but for our listeners here. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't always been that way. You've just given us the description of the business that you've had to date.
The superhero.
Right? But you started a business called The Results Guys a long time ago that didn't end as this one is currently going. Tell us about The Results Guys and that time in your life, please.
What I was doing at that time was giving all my energy to the business and to my relationship and to my children and to everything else, and not filling my own cup. And so I ended up at the end of that. I woke up one day, I was 30 kilos overweight. Yeah. I was mentally fried. I was at a stage in my business where it was sort of ticking along, but it wasn't growing. It was actually in mild decline, and I couldn't figure out, you know, I couldn't sell ice to a dying man in a desert. And I was a sales coach, right? And I just couldn't figure out what was the problem. My brain wasn't creative enough. I wasn't performing. And I mean, and then, which I'm sure we'll get into shortly, that then all just came crashing down because failure, I love what Tony says, right? Failure is not some Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
Failure is not some cataclysmic event.
Hmm.
It's failure to do all the little things over a long period of time.
Yeah. Right. In hindsight, however, why did you wake up feeling disconnected from this successful business? You said then you had trouble sort of like your mind was so cluttered, you sort of like weren't quite identifying at all. But in hindsight now, as you look back, how did you get to this stage?
Because I didn't take care of myself.
Yeah.
And I was giving all my time, attention, and self to my partner, my kids, and my business, and none to myself.
Yeah.
And so when I came to my clients and when it came to my clients and also being creative, I had nothing left to give.
Yeah.
I was trying to give to everyone from an empty cup, so they speak. Yeah. And I made these random, you know, videos like, oh, you have to give to yourself. And here's me playing golf with a friend of mine. But what I wasn't doing, I had like, it was unintentional. It was, it was like, I'm going out, look at me just enjoying myself, swinging a club.
Yeah. And,
but this really enjoyable, that's really enjoyable. What, surely I'm filling my cup.
Yeah.
Hang on, no, no, no. But now, every freaking morning, every morning, without fail, I get up, I do my morning habits, I go for my walk, I do my bits, and I intentionally fill my cup. Right? And because people think that, oh, if I just do things I enjoy, then I'm filling my... Nope.
No.
No. That's not how it works, right? The things you enjoy are part of filling your... feeding your soul. But if you want to fill your cup, that is creating a system that fills your cup.
Yeah.
So, and allows you to perform and sets you up for success every day. And that doesn't necessarily have to be in the morning.
It's I was about to say
you know, you can set yourself up for the next day, the night before. You can set yourself up for the afternoon in the middle of the day. It doesn't actually matter when you do it. It's the intentional consistency that counts.
Yeah. Well, that win the mornings. And sometimes you've got to win the afternoons and evenings as well. And sometimes you've got to win the weekends.
I would say all of this, you know, intentional consistency, living with intention, this requires a certain amount of awareness around the fact that these things do fill your cup, right? Now, you didn't have that awareness when you were burning yourself out, right?
Actually, it's funny.
Or you lost it, or you got...
It's funny because you say that. So, one of the key principles of mind in my Mind Body Profit is ownership. Right. And to take ownership, you need three core facets: self-awareness, self-responsibility, self-control. Self-awareness is understanding, you know, where you're at, what you need. Those are, it's being aware of yourself, right? Being aware of your faults, right?
Aware of everything.
Yeah. And self-responsibility is then being able to take responsibility that it is on you to fix those issues. Self-control is then taking the bloody action.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And taking all those actions and having control over your own emotions to be able to do that. I actually think a lot of the time we are either consciously or subconsciously aware of those issues.
I agree.
The difference is, are you willing to take responsibility? And then, which is where most people get held up, are you willing to take control?
Yeah.
Because true ownership is self-control.
I think something interferes there, and I just use simply the word distractions. A whole host of distractions are also playing a part in our lives, and they've almost become habitual. And so the time that's left available to actually recognize, I'm fully aware of this. I want to take responsibility. I'll get around to the actions sooner than later. It never comes. The habitual distractions continue to dominate, just like one did in your life.
Well, I think the reality is, and this is exactly where that is it's easier to commit to others than to commit to ourselves.
Yeah.
But then we don't realize that it's actually the only way to commit to others is to commit to ourselves.
You need to say that one again while you go.
It's easier to commit to others than it is to ourselves, but the only way to commit to others is to commit to ourselves.
Yeah, that's a gem. There's a gem.
Look at me feeling all flush. You see my chest coming out slightly?
But let's bring that to life, because you did have a major distraction and you have referred to it before when you mentioned the word relationship. There was a quality that relationship that was fascinating. Could you please share?
The fact that we were polyamorous.
I think that was the quality.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, we weren't. So, the reality of the relationship is that so I met this girl. She was, you know, let's call her Tina.
Nice, diplomatic. I like that.
I met this girl, and she was, you know, at the time she was lovely, amazing. I fell head over heels, and she was cool. She had two little beautiful girls who were loves of my life, you know, and we got together, and I spent 6 years with her.
Yeah.
And throughout that time, we moved in together fairly quickly, and I got an instant family, and she had depression, anxiety, and then quickly developed seizures.
Mm.
So then that means that I was now taking care of a partner and two kids. Like, I've never done that before.
Mm.
So I managed that situation. And then I think what happened maybe is, when someone has anxiety and depression, it becomes on you, as the partner, to sort of support them to some degree.
Sure.
And not for everyone. It depends on how much they take control of that and how much they seek help. And there's a lot of factors to it. Mm. And I don't want to discount that, because it's a really big thing. And it is really important that people understand that that's very difficult for them.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's a very difficult situation. It's not just some made up thing in their mind. You know what I mean? But so what ended up happening, though, because of these seizures and all the things that were going on, is I did a lot of the caring.
Mm.
And, as we got to this management point, I think what actually happened is I had set a precedent that I would do everything, that I would take care of everything. And then I basically, at a point, was just getting used, right? And one day we were sitting in front of COVID had happened, and we were sitting outside, and we'd been through so much trauma. And I thought to myself, not on this day, but throughout the relationship, I had thought to myself, oh, it must be real, because we're still hanging on after all this time, after all these things, we're strong. We must be really strong. The reality is I was, part of it, and I knew this at the time, was I was there because I wasn't willing to leave those children.
Mm.
Because they're like, they were my heart, right?
Yeah.
And
so how did the polyamorous relationship evolve out of all this?
That's exactly where I was. Like, we were sitting outside, right? Yeah. It was during COVID. And one day, we were actually in a reasonably good space at the time.
Yeah.
And it is something that, she had very often talked about swinging and that sort of stuff. Like, she had been to swingers parties in her old relationships and rada, rada, rada. And then but she'd never done anything. And then I had also met a polyamorous person, through the business community, and I just knew a little bit about her, and we were talking, and I don't know, one thing led to another, and we sort of just, let's give it a go. I'm a try everything once kind of guy.
Yeah.
But if you know anything about polyamory, it requires really intense communication. You've got to be able to communicate really effectively.
With who?
With your partner.
Yeah.
Well, with all your partners, because that's the whole idea of polyamory, is it's multiple partners, right? But you've got to be able to have really open, honest communication. I think you call it being hot, right?
Being hot. Or becoming a hottie.
Yeah. Honest.
H-O-T-E.
Yeah. What is it? Honest.
Honest, open, transparent, with the E, delivered with empathy.
Oh, that's
there's
very,
the E.
That's very cute. Mm. Yep. So, So, basically, you have to have, you have to be able to set really good boundaries and have really open, honest communication, and everyone then follows those boundaries. They're not rules, but they're boundaries. But open, honest communication is really important. And what can happen is, if you don't have that communication, just things go sideways. People get anxious, and I
would say things go sideways in the same way they would in a monogamous relationship when you don't have that clear communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure some expert on polyamory is probably going to bite my head off for what I'm saying here. But
bring it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know anything. But the reality for me and how it played out for us is that I was very communicative, and she was very avoidant and secretive and broke lots of boundaries. And, I started catching her in lots of little lies and bits and bobs. I mean, there's no point going into like nitty gritties of it, right?
Yeah.
But like I started catching her in lots of little lies and all these bits and bobs. And then I started to become, and I've got to take self-responsibility for this, I started to become really anxious. Now, I've got a very secure attachment style usually. If you know anything about attachment styles, there's avoidant attachment, secure attachment, anxious attachment. And so, it's just a way to like, I don't know if I necessarily say that's all that love is and relationships are, but it's just a good way to like, I started to become really anxious. And so, as I became more anxious and wanted to get in there, she-
Get in where? What do you mean by
that? Connect with her.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right. She became more avoidant and wanted to pull back.
Okay.
Right. And so- I don't know if you've ever been in a relationship where you, towards the end, you start to feel this, you can feel the distance between you. Have you ever lay in bed with someone?
Yeah.
And you physically, you're lying in bed, you're lying right next to them, you're right here, and you can feel the distance. This massive, it's magnetic, like this repelling.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, we were at that stage, and I remember something, you know, going down. We had an argument. And I had had a hard day at work. We had an argument, and then I sat in the kitchen one night on the floor for 3 hours, right? Like with my head in my hands. The kids weren't home at the time. And she walked past me and she tapped me on the shoulder and she said, "You'll be right, mate."
Oh,
right. Geez. And then, you know, out of this sheer desperation, I mean, I was doing everything I possibly could to keep the relationship together because, I mean, that's sort of what I believe in doing is, and I'm not saying I was perfect. I mean,
and you were attached to the kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I'm not saying I was perfect, right? Yeah. I'm Greek. We were brought up in a very loud, yelly kind of household. So there were plenty of times where I raised my voice. I probably shouldn't have, you know, those are things. I'm not perfect.
Mm.
But over the period of being with her, funny enough, I really learned how to control my emotions very well because I had to, because when someone just won't understand you, no matter what you do, they refuse to, you know, you're in an argument, they just refuse to agree just out of sheer fact. You have to learn to be calm. And so it takes me a lot now. Either way, I could go on this story for a million years. But what happened was, that's when all the overwhelm from business, all the not taking care of myself, all the stuff, you know, all of that just piled in all at once.
Yeah.
And, you know, I realized,
right,
I've got to sell this business. I can't function anymore.
Yeah. So you've got the burnout from the business. You've got all this tension from this polyamorous relationship. You've got a complete breakdown of trust.
Yeah. And this burnout and the burnout from managing the relationship and taking care of the kids, taking care of her, managing all, like just doing everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it created an enormous breakdown, an incredible degree of pain and chaos. In your own personal life. Come back, however, why explain to us, the ignorant, why someone would want to search for a polyamorous relationship in the first place? What is the, what's the attraction? But what is the psychology behind that? Do you have any? Having experienced it, what do you got to say about it?
If you're searching for a polyamorous relationship because you want more sex,
yeah,
that's not the reason to get into polyamory. Polyamory is for people who love love.
Okay, right? Wow.
Who love love, because that's what it is. It's multiple relationships. You want more sex, just go be a swinger. Mm. You'll be fine. Right now, I personally will never be polyamorous, right? Yeah. I tried it. I didn't like it. I am beyond grateful for the experience because it taught me so much about jealousy. It taught me so much about communication. I mean, my communication skills, right? Even though, you know, hers maybe not, mine went through the roof in terms of like, because I was practicing open communication so much.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm super grateful because it allowed me to see the toxicity in our relationship.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think the attraction for people in polyamory for a lot of people is, I can have sex with whoever I want. Well, actually, no, you're building relationships. So for polyamory to really be about you, like if polyamory is for you, it's for you because you love love in all its form.
Yeah.
For me though, and you also have to believe that, you know, love is really fluid, right?
Yeah.
And infinite.
But for me, someone said to me once, and I never understood it. They said, you know, true love is choosing each other every single day.
Mm.
And I didn't do that. I didn't realize that at the time. But now when I'm with Emily, who is just the best thing that's ever happened to me. Can't even explain how amazing she is. We've been through good times and hard times and all that sort of stuff, but do you know how nice it is to be with someone who you choose every day and also chooses you every single day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a, that, like, there is just.
You're practicing intentional consistency with your love for this person, and they are doing the same for you.
Yeah.
Mm. And see, I think when that happens, my little favorite phrase is, that's when 1 + 1 = 7.
Yeah.
It might be 37. It could be 127.
A billion. Depending.
I like 7.
Depending upon the potency of the consistency of action. But it does require two people to be totally dedicated
to each other,
to give love to each other, demonstrated through action. And it could be the smallest of actions.
Yeah, 100%.
Repeatedly over time. Chip, you said something before there, but I can't let it go. Mate, it was only two words.
Love
you
is said, infinite.
No, you, infinite, mate.
Infinite's one word, just let's clarify that.
But
yes.
I want you to elaborate on why you threw that in there. There was a thought behind, because love is infinite, therefore, it can transfer over to a polyamorous scenario. Is that what you're semi-suggesting?
That's what I think. If polyamory is for you, you have to believe that love is infinite. You cannot approach love or a romantic relationship in the mindset of it being a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
Because then that necessarily means there's a finite amount of resources here, and I need to hoard my part of that. Yeah. I need to hoard this love all for myself.
Yeah.
I'm not saying – now, I don't want to tell anyone how to think. If this is the kind of attitude you have, I've met plenty of people for whom that is the attitude and it works for them, but they're obviously not polyamorous.
Yeah.
Can I add in there – sorry to interrupt. No. I also add in there that not only – it's because, I mean, I personally believe love is infinite in multiple different ways.
Yeah.
I think it's also you have to be able to – like the complexity of multiple relationships. That has to excite you, because that's really important. Because think about your relationship and consider that times two.
Yeah.
That times
but
three.
You put a condition on it before when you said you can only enjoy and embrace the complexity if there is hoty communication, honest, open and transparent between all players.
Yeah.
That was the condition in which the complexity can be handled. Yeah. Chip, continue with the whole concept of love is infinite.
To key off what you were just saying, to make that work and to be able to be hot in all of your polyamorous relationships, you have to believe that love is infinite. You have to believe that you can bring the amount of energy you'd bring to a completely, deeply committed, loving relationship more than once and at the same time.
Yeah.
And you can't do that unless the resource is infinite.
Can I throw this in? Let's say we at this table here agree that love is infinite. I quite like that concept.
I agree.
But I can also see how that can be applied to love is infinite, which gives me the power to see every single person as someone that I can love, but not in an intimate sexual way. Everyone could potentially be my brother and my sister, because that's the way I choose to see humanity. I choose to see people that way. Love becomes a lifestyle, a viewpoint, a way of seeing people that are all around. It doesn't mean they'll love you back. That's their choice. But we have that beautiful infinite possibility of seeing humanity that way, from which we can actually harness that incredible tray of infinite love and harness that for our treasured one. And I'm saying it in that way because that too is harnessed from infinite love.
I agree, Brent, but we talk about this a lot. I think that is only useful if you can clearly define love in the way that you're talking about for people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just going to throw it back to the contemplatives. And the easiest way and the best way to describe that sort of love, I think, is wanting the best for someone.
That's it. I love that. I love that. Because as you said that, I'm going, what does that love look like where everyone is your brother and sister? It's that you're looking for the good in them.
Mm.
You're looking for the value. And if you can add value, that is the loving act. Only if they allow you to add value. But we must understand that adding value could be a smile.
I think the simple way to put this is the same way that people need to put love for just relationships. You know, there's so many relationship books out there, how to be in a good relationship, and everyone tells a different story.
Mm.
The reason is because there's no definition. You can't define love. You can't sit there and say love is this one thing. This is how I feel love. This is how you feel love. Love is so wild. It is so free. It is so infinite in itself that there is no definition. And so many different relationships, even happy ones, work in so many different ways on so many different levels.
G'day again, listeners, you fluorescent tree frogs in the wet hot rainforest of spiritual inquest. It's Chip here, and forgive my second interruption, but I couldn't let that thought pass without hitting you with another of my loaded questions, because I was listening to Andrew waxing lyrical about the wildness of love, the unwieldiness, the infiniteness of love, and it alerted me to something that I actually see as a problem that arises every time we try to talk about love. Now, I'll return to this in the take-home paper for now. It's enough to simply ask yourself this question. What is love?
The reality is, if you want to know if polyamory is for you, check it out. Go try it. It's an adventure.
Nicely put.
Right? And so, maybe it's an adventure for you, but like you said, an adventure is stepping into the unknown, right, with some joy.
Andrew, we are approaching the end of this podcast, and, mate, how we end this, you're going to be immensely challenged. I'm letting you know in advance right now.
He's up to it.
Yeah, because
I just put my hat back on and walk away.
Because the questions that we're going to ask you in this finale, Andrew, I don't know whether you're up for this challenge.
You're only allowed
to give a one sentence answer. But you're not allowed. You can't give us two sentences, mate.
Bring it.
Mate, I don't know whether you can do this.
Let's go, mate.
All right, here we go.
I'll take you on.
And every answer that you give has got to be an action. It's your advice, your guidance. Take this action.
Okay.
Here we go. Why should listeners hear on this podcast, hearing your wonderful tones, want to take on adventure? Benefit, please, of adventure.
Adventure is life. Life is an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And by stopping adventure through life, you're not living.
Mm. You're speaking to the world, and the world has asked you for if there is one activity that can create greater joy for all or most people. What is that one activity that you would say, please consider doing this?
Practice acceptance.
Elaborate.
People get stuck in life on what they don't have, or what was, or what will be, or, you know, who they lost or who they will have. And if you want to be happy in this moment, or you want to be happy is the wrong word. If you want to be content and joyful and have the ability,
tranquil
and have the ability to find peace and train yourself to be happy and all those sorts of things, you first have to be able to accept that this is the way your life is now. This is life is as it is right now. And until you can do that, then you can't move forward and yeah. ways of doing it. Everyone talks about it in different ways. Practice gratitude every day.
Yeah.
All these things. What that's training you to do is see the good in your life now so you can accept life as it is for you now.
Yeah.
So then you can create the life you want. But it starts by accepting this is me. This is who I am. This is what I am. This is where I am. And you see people that get to these, you know, morbidly obese stages and they're like, I could never lose that weight. Well, it's happened before. Mm. People have done that.
Mm.
But you first have to accept that you let yourself get there.
Mm.
And then and only then are you free to move forward.
Mm.
But it's practice acceptance.
So Andrew Komnenos, who are you?
Project Remarkable. Who am I?
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Who are you?
I am just a man who lives to bring joy to the world. And if no one remembers me after I'm gone, but I've made the world a better place, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. That sounds like a statement. That's a pretty good description of a fulfilled and contented life. Yeah. Thank you ever so much for sharing so much of your life, particularly that aspect of your life. I can't remember talking about polyamorous relationships on this podcast before.
Yeah, it's a first. That is virgin territory.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the podcast took a bit of a sideline down that pathway there, didn't it? We just wandered in.
We were pretty keen to go down there.
It's what you might call a hot talking point.
I love how like there was no mention of that out there. You're like, oh yeah, we're gonna talk about these 3 points.
Yeah.
Bang.
Swooped in on you.
No, buddy, really, really grateful. Thank you ever so much, dear listeners. Do hope that you enjoyed it too. I have no doubt that there were topics there that might have raised a few eyebrows and a few comments around the dinner table tonight. You discuss them with full gusto. Thank you, dear listeners. It's been great that you have been a part of yet another chapter of A Journey with Bernie and Andrew? No, wrong answer, mate. And Chip.
And Chip.
Cheers, dear listeners. Goodbye. See you next time. Bye. Chipster. That was different.
Yeah. Different and extremely useful in all its own way. Fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh is the word.
Yeah. And what made it fresh were topics to me like the definition of adventure and why adventure and why we should seek responsible adventure. And then, of course, he brought up one of the great adventures, the polyamorous relationships.
Yeah, it might be the great adventure of our time. Mind them.
But, mate, I still enjoyed that exploration, but also how it arrived at what was almost agreed around the table was that our biology didn't seem to be totally congruent.
I would say some people's, a significant amount of people's doesn't seem to be congruent for that. And yes, I think that there would be good evolutionary reasons
for that. Well, mate, if there's a listener here who actually has a different view or something to add, wouldn't it be great to hear from them, mate? Yeah.
We want to hear from it. Well, we want to hear from every side of that discussion, you know? Like, there'd be a rich tapestry of opinion, and I want to hear it.
Absolutely. And if ever there was an episode that should be attracting that feedback, mate, this is the episode over here. Mm. Come on, listeners, get out those fingers there and start typing the typewriter. I'm laughing at myself. Did I just age myself by saying typewriter?
Just a touch. At least you didn't call it by its brand. Get the old Underwood out.
Hey, Chip, you talking about your brand. Your brand is Chip's Take Home Pay, and you're going to convert so much of this into actions that we should consider. And I'm so grateful that you're going to do that, mate, in such your usual superb way. Hey, the one that you did in the last episode, that was just first class, dear champion.
You have to say that. I'm sitting right here.
Hey, take it away, please, pal. And while you're there, finish off the whole episode for us, will you?
Thanks, Bern, and thank you, Andrew, and thank you, listeners, you regal eagles riding the updrafts of enlightenment. Thank you for joining me, Chip Lachlan Huddy, for another edition of Chip's Take Home Pay, in which I distill the strongest themes of the podcast you just listened to into concrete action steps so that you can begin to apply the wisdom of our guests to your life, not next week, not tomorrow, but right now and today. I reckon we have to talk about polyamory, the love of more than one person at a time. Contentious issue, but should it be? Let's pause here, because this is my segment, and for better or worse, Bern has allowed me dominion over it. So do indulge me, listeners, as I use this segment to engage deeply with a bugbear of mine. Let me ask you a question. Now, we're fond of asking it of our guests on this very podcast, and I asked it of you before. What is love? And by now, you've had plenty of time to come up with an answer to that question. And I bet you didn't come up with a very good answer, did you? If you're honest with yourself, you probably admit that the definition of love that you came up with was a bit wishy-washy. The reason I'd be willing to make that bet is because not many of our guests could come up with a definition of love that wasn't wishy-washy when we posed that question to them on the podcast. Some did, not many, which leads me to another contentious idea. I don't think the concept of love is very useful at the moment, because no one seems to be able to articulate what love means. We all have a feeling, but that's usually all we have. And if you want to live something as a purpose, as a hard-edged purpose, you need more than a feeling. So I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've come to a conclusion. And you heard me articulate it earlier in this podcast, and we're going to dive deep into that right now. And you can agree, you can disagree, you can interrogate and examine and investigate this definition of mine. But I'm going to put it out there because I think we need a nice, neat, concrete definition of love if that concept is ever to mean anything at all, and therefore to be of any use at all. And I stole a lot from the contemplative traditions like Buddhism, and a lot from long conversations with intelligent people. And I've tested this definition on a few willing ears, and this seems like a damn fine starting point. So here it is one more time. Love is genuinely wanting the best for someone or something. Now, simple though this concept of love is, I really think it works. And the reason I think it works so well is because it's a mindset that can be applied universally to every other person on this planet, to every other thing on this planet, to the planet itself, to the universe entire. And the reason it can do this is because it taps into that foundational aspect of the human experience that we hear about again and again, both on this podcast and in so many other places, which is the interconnectedness, the interdependence of all things. So by wanting the best for everyone and everything, that means you want the best for yourself as well. Even when you want the best for that angry, drunken idiot who's spitting in your face because he thought you looked at him the wrong way at a bar, you're still at the same time wanting the best for yourself, because the world in which that drunken idiot is living his best life is the world in which he's not spitting into your face at a bar. It is the literal ideal world where we're all acting in each other's interest and everyone is acting in ours. It's a way of being selfish and selfless all at once, which is profoundly powerful, which is actually utopian. So to pull it all together, to get back on theme, that's the kind of polyamory I'm encouraging with this take-home pay. And the action step is as simple as that. Start to try consciously, doggedly, unwaveringly to want the best for everyone and everything. Now, is that as sexy as you thought polyamory was supposed to be? Probably not. But if you want to change the world, and we do, then I invite you to start thinking this way. And if you just want more sex, I think Andrew put it best, just go be a swinger. But that's another podcast. All right, that's all from me, beautiful people. And I'll just leave you with the usual request to go to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or whatever podcast player of your choice. Please rate us, leave us a review. We'd love a 5-star review because that helps us the most algorithmically. And that is very important for getting the word out and building the show. And that's important to us. And we'd like it to be important to you too. But of course, we're happy with an honest review, and we trust you to do the right thing. Also, don't forget to jump on our website, journeywithbernie.co. That's journeywithbernie.co, where you can find the show notes to this and all our other episodes, as well as information on how to get involved with whatever we're doing right now, be that treks to Nepal like the one we're on right now, or be that community outreach or fundraising for brilliant films like James Lingwood's A Light in the Slaughterhouse. All right, beautiful people, I'm Chip Huddy. This has been Chip's Take Home Pay, and I do hope you found some pay worth taking home. As always, my friends, auf Wiedersehen, and just remember...